Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Discovering Buddhism. We're in the first module, Mind and Its Potential. Do we have anyone who's here for the first time tonight? Well, a couple people. Okay, glad to have you. I think I gave out some incorrect information about the dates of the class. Tonight is the third session, third of six. So we'll be here next Monday night. There will be no class Monday, November 3rd. And then we'll have two more classes, the 10th and the 17th. So tonight is the third of those. Let's see. Do you have extra copies of the completion form? Okay, great. Thank you. And so I'm picking up where Venerable George left off. We'll do a little bit of review. He covered a lot of the major points, but we'll go ahead and start with some meditation. I think we're all experienced meditators by now. So maybe we'll just meditate for the whole session tonight. Yeah, go for it. So, as always, we begin by checking our posture. We're sitting a little bit straighter than we normally sit. Our back is a little bit straighter, not rigid, but a little bit more upright. If we're on a cushion, it's good to sit towards the front third of the cushion. If you're in a chair, you can rest against the back of the chair, but don't slump back into it. And it's perfectly okay if you're sitting in a chair to put a cushion under your feet if that's more appropriate. The whole point of the posture is to establish a stable posture that, once established, is somewhat self-maintaining, so you don't have to put a lot of effort into the posture. So if you find it excruciatingly painful or distracting, try working with it a little bit and see if you can come up with something that's not going to bother you during your meditation. But we like to have our back straight because it's said that that opens up the energy channels that flow through our body just in front of our spinal column. Our head is straight on our shoulders, maybe a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Our eyes are either lightly closed or just slightly open, so that a little bit of light comes through, not enough that we recognize forms. Our mouth is lightly closed, again, not clenched. It's said that the best place for the tongue is on the upper gums, on the inner side above the teeth, the back side of the upper gum. Our shoulders are down, not up around our ears, but down and a little bit back, just slightly, again, not rigid or stiff, but again, so our chest is open. Our upper arms are away from the sides of our torso. And we can either put our hands on our knees or right hand on left with thumbs touching just below the navel. And then our legs are in whatever position we find comfortable and, again, stable and non-distracting. So just take a minute, scan your posture. If there's something you need to wiggle or scratch, go ahead and do it right now. And then just settle into that very stable posture where you really feel like you're planted in it and you don't feel any need to move. And now, just to settle our minds a little bit, we'll take three deep breaths from the abdomen. The stomach expands on the in-breath. The diaphragm is pulled down. And then three deep exhalations. with the stomach coming back towards the spine as we exhale. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And it's very typical in this tradition to begin a meditation session by setting the motivation. Why am I doing this? Just think about that for a moment. Maybe just out of curiosity, that's fine. Because you find it a little bit calming and relaxing, that's great. But it says that the best motivation, best in that it produces the most results, most changes our mind in a positive direction, is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. Bodhi meaning great, citta mind, the great mind and motivation, that I am doing this meditation in order to develop my mind so I can be of more benefit to others. Even something as simple as just sitting on a cushion for a few minutes can have this enormously powerful motivation behind it. So we don't normally think that way. It seems a little grandiose or self-important even. But even if we can just generate that thought effortfully, it creates wonderful merit. So let's just think along those lines for a minute. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation session. It's always good to have a chosen object for the meditation. The point is not to let our mind just wander aimlessly, but to have a chosen object. Meditation is the process of becoming familiar with the chosen object. So this is a simple concentration meditation, simple but not necessarily easy. So all we do is concentrate on the breath, the neutral movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils, the actual physical sensation of breath moving in and out through the nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. We place the mind, the consciousness on the breath. so that we can say that the mind and breath are, we can say they're almost one. And then, of course, we quickly notice that the mind isn't on the breath anymore. So when we notice that, we come back to the breath. We don't give ourselves a hard time. We just come back over and over. The physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through the nostrils. Just developing our ability to concentrate. And you can relax your concentration now. And as always, we end our meditation with a brief dedication. And just think to yourself for a moment that I've done something a little bit out of the ordinary. I've made an effort. I've developed my mind's ability to concentrate to a slight degree. I've placed that positive imprint on my mind stream, and may that imprint ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. Any comments or questions on the meditation? Everybody seemed very serious. Okay.
I just want to know, how long do you do the breathing meditation before you move on to the next step?
As Venerable George talked about last week, I think, you know, breathing meditation helps us develop our positive, develop the ability to concentrate, but in and of itself, that's not going to give us a lot of spiritual realizations. So I think that, so typically after doing some breathing meditation, we would move on and do a meditation on love or compassion or wisdom or some mantra recitation. And I think it's entirely individual. I mean, I think very experienced meditators aren't going to need to spend much time at all because they've already developed their very positive qualities of concentration. If you can't concentrate, then you maybe want to spend more time on the breathing. But I don't think you can say by the clock how much is the right amount. It's an individual choice. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, over here.
Hey, Robbie, I just want to ask about the homework.
Okay.
Can I ask a question about the homework?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
So in doing the continuity of the mind...
Yeah, so the homework was to meditate on the continuity of the mind, and we'll talk about that briefly again tonight.
What exactly are we going for during this time? Either I spend too much time concentrating, and then I don't get very far as
mm-hmm.
like, logistically time period, you know,
mm-hmm.
a couple days,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Or I traipse over lots of different things and then it gets kind of mushy
mm-hmm.
and end up, you know, a month out or something. What are we looking for? What are we trying to observe?
Well, there's no, you know, there's no goal or thing. The point is to, the Buddha said the mind is continuous, and we'll talk about that, what that means. So the first thing is, is that my experience or is that not my experience? So look at your own mind, the progression of thoughts, trace them back. Does it seem like they're continuous or does it seem like they're not continuous? Okay, if they are continuous, what are the implications of that? So you're doing a little bit of analysis, okay? Getting a sense, you know, and most people will get a sense that there's a thought preceded by another thought, preceded by another moment of consciousness. That there is something, even though I am not the same person I was yesterday, much less 10 years ago, in some ways, there is a connection between there. There is a continuity. Okay, and we want to see, there's a continuity, but it's not static, okay, in that things are always changing. They're impermanent, but they are connected in a way. Okay.
So like,
but again, it's not like there's a right answer that you have to get when you do it. Yeah.
So maybe more about the connectivity of the thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One moment of consciousness leading to another one, to another one. Yeah.
So I meditated on the continuity of the mind, and usually when I meditate, I'm able to get some patches of clear light.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried meditating on the continuity of the mind, I was all over the place. I had all kinds of thoughts interrupting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I guess I haven't tried meditating on something before. I just, when I meditate, I start off with a breathing meditation, and then I let that go, and then, you know, I have the periods of the clear light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what would you advise that I try to do to get to try to connect this continuity? Because it was, everything was scattered when I tried to
do
that.
Yeah, yeah. Because like I said, we're doing some analysis. We're thinking about something. It's not just watching what comes up, but saying, okay, what does that lead to? Okay. And if you notice your mind is off something, bring it back again, and that the continuity of thoughts is the object in the same way that the breath was the object during the breathing meditation. So anything that is not that means you've wandered away. And that's what they actually mean when they use the word mindfulness. That word gets used a lot, and the actual Buddhist or Tibetan Buddhist definition of mindfulness is that quality of mind that lets us know when we've wandered away from the object. That's mindfulness. So we're mindfulness of the breath. We're mindful of the continuity of thoughts. So whatever the chosen object is, we're always coming back to it. And of course, our mind's always wandering away. And then we come back to it again and again. Okay? Mm-hmm. Question here.
So I found that it was helpful to hear last time, or at least I chose to focus on sort of the, I think he talked about kind of gross consciousness and then subtle
mm-hmm.
consciousness and then gross consciousness sort of in the sleep
yeah.
cycles and the different
mm-hmm.
states of the mind and REM
okay.
and delta and all that.
I'll review that for people who aren't familiar with those terms. We'll review that tonight, yeah.
So that was very interesting, but I found, and I know the general instruction is to just notice and not, you know, try to get attached to something, but
mm-hmm.
I just noticed that unlike any other meditation that I've done, that just an incredible weight or heaviness, like a physical feeling of
mm-hmm.
weight was very present.
Mm-hmm.
And almost in an uncomfortable way. So I was
mm-hmm.
just wondering if that is typical in this type of a thing, or, you know, sort of a bad question, but
no,
I comment on that.
This may not answer your question, but I think feelings like that often do arise. And I think if we look at them closely, what's going on is that we're losing our sense of me or self. If we really are watching the mind closely, Robbie disappears. Robbie is not there. And we'll talk about that tonight. And that can be an unpleasant feeling when we're first experiencing it. I'm just guessing that it may be a little bit of loss of sense of self, and that can be a little bit, yeah. Okay. Okay, so like I said, I wanted to review some of the points Venerable George has made over the last 2 weeks. This class is about the mind, which we use fairly synonymously with consciousness. We're not talking about the brain, the physical object. We're talking about the mind. Sometimes we say awareness. Sometimes we say perceptions or perceivers. But this is the first module for discovering Buddhism because, as His Holiness says at times, Buddhism can be described as a mind science as opposed to a religion. There's no creator God, certainly, and it's really about understanding our mind. And I personally find it very helpful to come back to that over and over. If you come to Kadampa, you know, you look at all this stuff up here, very colorful, all these images. You can come to pujas and people are chanting in a language they don't understand, and there's incense burning and flower petals being tossed. Just remember, it's all working with your mind. Everything in Tibetan Buddhism goes back to its effect it has on your mind. Okay. That is what Buddhism is about. It's about developing your positive qualities of mind. So if we accept that, then we have to be clear on what we're talking about when we talk about the mind. What is it and what are its characteristics. So I think Venerable George mentioned all of these, but when I lead this course, there are four characteristics of mind that I really want people to get in their head. Venerable George was talking about another class he was leading here, not this one. I shouldn't tell you this, but it's funny. He said, there was a lot of attention, but there wasn't much retention. So if you retain anything from this class, from this module, this is what I'd like you to retain. And it's really three characteristics of the mind and one function. Or we can say four characteristics of the mind. And if, does anybody know what the first, would want to take a guess at the first one? Yeah, he didn't emphasize, he mentioned them all, but he didn't point them out as four things. What's the...
The mind is non-material.
Exactly. Thank you. Non-physical. Yeah, non-material. It's not made of matter. Okay, so we're not talking about the brain. We're talking about a phenomena that is completely non-physical. It is closely related to the brain. It's closely related to the body. But it cannot be found and seen under a microscope. Okay, it is not made up of physical parts. From the Buddhist point of view, a non-physical phenomena cannot be the result of a previous physical phenomena. A non-physical phenomena can only come from a previous non-physical phenomena. So mind always comes from a previous moment of mind. From a previous moment of mind. What my non-physical mind now is the result of previous non-physical phenomena. It's not the brain, it's not the neurotransmitters, it's that whatever it is, consciousness. And this is really where there's some fascinating work being done in neurosciences right now, trying to figure out what consciousness is from a Western point of view, because this is kind of where we've gotten, and now they're trying to explain this phenomena of consciousness. It's there continually. We know what it is, but we're not really aware of it. So it's like there's a person inside our head who's experiencing everything, but it's not even like that. It's a completely non-physical phenomena. So that's the first thing we need to be clear on. Okay? What's the second point? Yeah.
Its nature is clear.
That's three. Okay?
Oh, I'm number skipping one.
Anybody want to take a stab at what comes next? Yeah.
Always existing?
Yes. Uh-huh. Without beginning, without end. Beginning or end. From the book. So this is the continuity of consciousness that we can look at in this life. And at a certain point, we get back to our first memory, and we can't trace anything back beyond that. But we know that we had a mind before that, because when do we have our first memories from? What age usually? Yeah, 2 to 3, I think. I don't think most people don't remember anything from age 1, though it happens. But we know that there was a mind there, okay? And the Buddhist point of view is that there was a mind before that. There was a previous moment of mind. As we said, it's a non-physical phenomena. It can't come. Egg and sperm do not create consciousness, okay? Those are two physical phenomena. From the Buddhist point of view, egg and sperm come together and create this body, another physical phenomena, but there is a consciousness that already existed that joins up with that body. So we can trace back to age 2, maybe a little farther, but But we know there were moments of consciousness before that, and from the Buddhist point of view, there was consciousness before this body existed. This Robbie exists because that consciousness joined with the egg and sperm to form this body and this consciousness together. So from the Buddhist point of view, there were countless previous lifetimes where this stream of consciousness, and that's a good image to use, is a stream or a river. It's flowing. It's always changing, but there's a continuity there. Lots of times we have to talk about images or analogies when we're talking about these things. But the consciousness goes back, and there is no first moment of consciousness. There is always a previous moment of consciousness, no matter how far back you go, how many countless life, previous lifetimes. And in the same way, this moment of consciousness always leads to another moment of consciousness, to another. At the time of death, when the body decays, the physical aspect of my being, but the consciousness leads to another moment of consciousness, to another moment of consciousness, and it'll join with egg and sperm if I'm getting a human rebirth or a mammalian rebirth, or if it goes into another realm, no telling what it'll join with. But that consciousness continues without end into the future. No beginning, no end. Consciousness is continuous. Moments of consciousness. The consciousness is always changing, but it's continuous. Okay? The thoughts are different, but consciousness is continuous. Okay, the third one. And you want to tell me again, Louise, what that is?
It's clear. It's, yes. Nature is clear.
Yes, and we'll just say it's in the nature of clear light. And this is where analogy, again, is very helpful. Venerable George used the image of an aquarium that, of course, with spotlessly clean water, the fish are like the thoughts floating through the clarity of our consciousness. Another image that's used is a perfectly clear sky. Clouds float through it, but the sky is in the nature of clear light. So what this is really the core of all Buddhism, okay? In the nature of clear light, which means it is just, and here I'll use a jargony word, it's like empty space. The nature of our mind and thoughts, emotions, feelings, memories arise in that space, okay? A feeling of anger, a feeling of jealousy, a feeling of love. But those are just thoughts occurring within the empty space of the mind. They are not the nature of the mind. If you come to, been coming to the Friday evening classes, Venerable George used the word adventitious, meaning they are not part of the inherent nature of the mind. Now, that's certainly not the way we think about our mind. We think, I'm basically an angry, irritable person. And if I work really hard, I can be a little bit more patient, but I'm struck with that anger. And the Buddha say, no, that is absolutely not part of your mind permanently. It can be completely removed, and it can be replaced with whatever you want to replace it with. You have the choice. You can, if you like being angry, you can just put more, fill it up with more angry thoughts. But if you like being compassionate and wise, you can develop qualities of compassion and wisdom and put them into that empty space. The Buddha said if our mind was not in the nature of clear light, if it had definite qualities, then we'd be stuck with those qualities. Our mind could not change, and enlightenment, becoming a Buddha, would be impossible. The fact that our mind has no inherent nature other than clear light is what allows us to become enlightened. Okay? And that is really kind of the key to all Buddhism. If we understand that we are not fixed, we're not stuck with what seems so real and solid, that it's all adventitious, and it can be removed and replaced by things that make us happier. That's the good news about Buddhism, okay? Once you get past suffering and death and karma and all that gloomy stuff. Okay? So, and the fourth one is the function of the mind. What is the function of the mind? What does the mind do? Yes, isn't that an ugly word? It cognizes. Or, some better one is perceives. It perceives. What does the mind perceive? It perceives a cup. It perceives a clock. It perceives a cushion. It perceives Joanna. It perceives Glenn. It perceives Louise. Okay? It perceives a memory of something that happened at work today. It perceived an emotion of I feel kind towards this person. Anything that occurs in our that our mind thinks or that we're aware of is a perception. It can be of a physical phenomena, an emotion, a memory, a dream, anything that occurs in our that empty space of the mind is a perception. So the mind perceives, which means, and that's not what this class is. Did I spell perceive right, or is it? Yeah, I before E, except after. Okay. That's not what this class is about, but the nature of the interaction between the mind or the consciousness that perceives a cup is one of the root questions in all of Buddhism, and it kind of explains a lot of the difference between the philosophic schools. My mind is perceiving that cup. So is the cup out there? Is the cup in my mind? Or is it somewhere in between the two? So the nature of how we perceive phenomena, how that works, is one of the deep philosophical questions in Buddhism. There's some schools, as they're referred to, that say, my mind and the cup become one, that they are indistinguishable. Some say the mind and the physical nature of the cup come together and create a cup. But it's there's a lot of abstruse arguing there about what's going on. But the mind perceives, okay? Physical phenomena, emotions, memories, everything. That's what the mind does. It perceives, or it cognizes, is a more correct word, actually. Okay, comments or questions on any of this I've said? Yeah.
I'm still just trying to... I'm having trouble visualizing the idea of something clear, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know, to me light implies that there's a color.
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. So right. Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. kind of like saying, oh, well, it's like red-blueness or
yeah.
black-whiteness.
We're talking about clear, colorless light.
Right.
And again, we're using images to try and get at something that's... that we're using analogies here. Even okay. clear light is not completely accurate.
So I shouldn't be literally thinking of something clear. Okay, that's luminous. It's just more of a metaphor for
yeah.
something else.
Mm-hmm. You okay. may want to think of empty space. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You may want to, or something like that.
Okay.
okay. Empty space or perfectly clear water in an aquarium or
okay.
whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we're using several different analogies to try and get at that.
And it's to... And sorry, but like it's to get at that our thoughts are clear when they're in the mind, or
no, the thoughts themselves that arise in that clear space are not clear. And hatred is not you wouldn't describe it as being clear.
Okay.
Okay, they can be nice thoughts, ugly thoughts, whatever, happy thoughts, unhappy thoughts. They definitely have characteristics, but they are not the mind. They're just
okay.
events occurring in this empty space.
Okay.
Temporary events that arise and fade away.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the mind is still considered impermanent?
The mind is impermanent, yes.
Okay.
What do we mean when we say impermanent when we're inside a Buddhist gompa? What does impermanent mean?
Depends on causes.
Changing, okay. Doesn't mean it's always there. It means it's changing from moment to moment, continuously changing. And there are a couple things that are permanent in Buddhist philosophy, and I always mess up when I talk about these. And one of them is, just again, this is really off the subject. One of them is the space in between phenomena. Okay? That is unchanging. Okay, if you get down to the smallest space in between, even below the subatomic level, space, empty space in between phenomena is unchanging. The cessation of a negative mind state, when you completely remove anger from your mind stream, that is said to be a permanent phenomena in that it's unchanging. The absence of anger is permanent, does not change. Let's see. Again, I'm getting way ahead of where we should be in this class. The emptiness of a phenomena is permanent. Yeah. But that's not the material of this class, okay?
But,
the mind itself is changing and is impermanent.
But the clear light aspect of it doesn't change, though.
Well, in that...
How does that work?
In that part, there are always different phenomena arising within it.
Right.
That implies that the clear light is changing also. It's not the exact same. But whether the clearness of it is permanent, I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's go back there. There's a hand back there. Okay. You got the mic. Okay.
If you remove anger in the next life, will it also be removed?
If you achieve what's called a cessation, which means all the karmic seeds from anger have been removed from your consciousness. It said that's a permanent state. But that's really, yeah, don't get too hung up on what's permanent. That's a philosophical argument.
When you say anger, do you mean things like jealousy and other emotions?
Yeah,
also?
All the ill will sort of emotions.
You can
divide anger into multiple. I mean, just low-grade irritation is considered a form of anger.
I mean,
yeah.
You wouldn't be an enlightened cheater or something. You know? In other words, everything?
Hmm?
All the bad?
No, I'm just talking about it in terms of permanence.
Right.
You can remove one negative mind stream, negative mental quality, permanently.
And still have other negative?
Yeah. You're not done. Okay. You're not enlightened, yeah.
But
it's kind of like, okay, I've done that one. That one's finished. I don't have to worry about that.
You've earned the bad.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Mic over here, please.
Just to beat a dead horse. So, clear light, if it was permanent, would that be an enlightened mind? How do you say that?
Enlightenment is not not permanent. Enlightenment is always changing.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. It is not the exact same from one moment to the next, okay? You may be having it's changing. In that, Buddha has compassion for all beings, but beings are being born and died all the time, so beings are changing, so the objects of your compassion are changing, so the compassion of a Buddha is changing, okay? It's always there, but it's not the exact same, yeah. How many, thoughts are in the snap of a finger? Richard knows the answer to this, don't you? It's like 84,000 or something, yeah. Changing that quickly, each one of those moments, yeah. Yeah, so enlightenment is impermanent in that it's changing. When you become enlightened, it does not go out of existence. It continues forever, same way as the consciousness. But it's changing from moment to moment, so it's impermanent in the way we use that term. Okay? But it continues without end. Okay? Okay. So let's do another meditation. We're going to meditate on the clear light nature of the mind. And this is one you really have to play with, because it seems like you're meditating on something that's not there. If it's empty space, how in the world can you meditate on empty space? But we'll give it a try. So begin by checking your posture. Three deep breaths from the abdomen to help settle your mind. Set your motivation. And begin by just a little bit of breathing meditation, just paying attention to the breath. And now we're going to take our concentration and place it on just the continual flow of thoughts in our consciousness. Just observe how there is continuously one thought after another. Air from the ventilator blowing. Itch on my nose. Memory of something that happened at work today. Ventilator. Something I have to do on the way home. Thought after thought after thought. Don't try to control them. Just notice one thought after another, after another. Sounds, feelings, memories, emotions. The never-ending flow of the thoughts. And now, see if you can get a sense of the empty space in which the thoughts occur, or in which they arise. Not the thoughts, but the space around them. The empty space, lacking any real characteristics in which the thoughts arise. Concentrate on that, not on the thoughts. If you're having problems, try using an analogy. Imagine looking up at a perfectly clear sky, or looking into perfectly clear water. And now you can relax your concentration. Just do a brief dedication. What was people's experience with that? Yeah.
I don't want to overstate it. I had a new experience. I started to cry. It was I don't know how to say it. I'll have to say more, but it was brand new.
Okay. Okay.
I had a hard time.
Yeah. It's not easy.
No.
It's not easy. Not at all easy.
I can't get my head around this thing. I suck at this.
That's a good place to start, okay? Yeah. Let's see. Let's go back here. There's a, and then we'll come.
I had a hallucination, and like stars coming at me very fast, and I felt dizzy. But I encounter dizziness quite often, actually.
Okay. I can't say.
I don't pay attention to it. But.
Okay.
I think this one's a little bit harder because we're supposed to actually engage the thoughts that come in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are tempting.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them I was like, oh, this is a nice thought.
Yeah.
Nice thought. And instead of focusing on the actual process, I'm like, oh, I just want to stay here in this wonderful thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's not the point of the meditation.
So how are we supposed to visualize a thought? That was my problem. I couldn't visualize a thought to see the space around it because I don't visualize thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts just are. You perceive them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Okay.
That's where I was stuck.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Susie. Yeah.
It was a sort of a. I guess I've done this before, and this was better than usual, so practice has helped.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I felt as if it might be possible, and that was soothing. And I was able to visualize it differently than normal. Normally, I keep saying, is this it, is this it, is this it, and I was able to center on one thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah, we got a lot of hands going up.
Okay. When you talked about thoughts, and I've been meditating for a while, and it was actually hard to make thoughts or think about thoughts because that's the opposite of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, force a thought. It wasn't working very well.
That's your thought, yes. Yeah. Forcing a thought, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I'm like you, where I had first it was like, what am I thinking about, you know? But what I've learned is that I let go of thoughts. I've been meditating for a while, and what I've learned to do is to just make them not sticky.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, then the force of them gets a lot less, and then you can get to the point where you can get to, you can see the clear light.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're no longer right in your face. They're way out there, and then they just kind of vanish all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as you're taking a step back and just watching. You know, you're not getting involved in it. You're just watching the parade go by.
And then the parade leaves.
Okay. Let's see. Okay.
I thought the analogy really helped, picturing the clear water or the clear sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm wondering if that was also a thought.
It is, yeah, but it helps. Analogy is valid to help us get there, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, back behind you, Patrick, two rows behind you.
curious. I misinterpreted the instructions. But so I was going for clearness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought from last week that worked for me as opposed to the aquarium was outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was remembering that movie Gravity.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, myself being just floating out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's misinterpreting at all. You know, whatever helps us to get there. I mean, we're approaching something that is very, like Louise says, very hard to see. Yeah.
An element in that experience where being clear was interrupted by me being there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like a subjective experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just another thought. Okay, I'm going to say something. There are a couple more things I wanted to review, and we touched on one of these. Okay, everybody, this, if you remember, nothing from this module except this, non-physical, without beginning, without end, in the nature of clear light, and its function is to cognize or perceive. Okay, we've already mentioned this. Trumbull George talked about there are three levels of consciousness, three levels of mind. And can somebody tell me what they are? Growth. Subtle. And I love the name of the third one. Very subtle. I mean, couldn't it? That's got to be one of those bad English translations. Okay. Yes. Subtlest. The subtlest, yes. The very subtle. Okay, the gross consciousness is the mind, that mind that we're living in now, okay? I like this, I don't like that, I'm stressed out, I'm depressed, I'm angry. Gross in that it doesn't perceive reality at all, okay? Very coarse, crude, inaccurate. Our interpretations of reality in this mind are really, it's all about me, okay? It's all about my reactions. This is our personality, what we falsely think of as ourself, okay, the gross mind. The subtle mind is a mind that's present in dreams, present in deep meditative states. It's said it's present when we faint. There's a moment of it when we faint, and there's also we experience it in sexual orgasm. Okay, so it's a deeper level of mind, more accurate, less tied up in a sense of self. Okay, a less sense of me, less sense of I. The very subtle mind is the clear light mind. Okay, this is the clear light mind, and this is what is without beginning and without end, and continues from one lifetime to the next. And this is where karma is carried, our past actions of body, speech, and mind that we will inevitably experience in the future. Those karmic imprints are on the very subtle mind. The subtle mind and the gross mind, well, particularly the gross mind is really the mind of this lifetime, and it arises, as does the subtle mind, it's the result of the karma that's carried on the very subtle mind, okay? But the gross mind does not go, you know, that does not go into the next lifetime. We don't carry that with us. It's kind of, during the death process, the gross mind and the subtle mind kind of subside. And then in the next lifetime, they'll arise again. So it's not like they're ending necessarily, but they kind of come and go. But the very subtle mind is the clear light mind. And that's the mind that, if we're prepared for it, if we've practiced and become great yogis and do the death meditation four times a day, as His Holiness the Dalai Lama does, at the moment of death, we have direct access to the very subtle mind. We can perceive, we are completely aware of it, we can control it, and we can make we can use that for spiritual progress at the moment of death. It's said that great meditators who are prepared for it actually look forward to the moment of death because they know they will have a direct experience of the very subtle mind and can use that to develop themselves spiritually. Most of us, we're not prepared for death. We go through it. We don't even see the very subtle mind. We miss it completely, and we're just thrown into the next lifetime under the complete control of past karma. But if we've practiced for it and have meditated on the death process, we can become very aware of this and actually stay in that clear light mind for a number of days or whatever. Okay? So just so you're familiar with these terms, the gross mind, the subtle mind, and the very subtle mind, the important thing is it's the very subtle mind that is the clear light mind. Okay? The gross mind has nothing in the nature of clear light about it. Okay? This is what we're talking about. So just wanted to review those terms. And so everything I've said so far is really a review. I wanted to introduce one new topic tonight. How are we doing on time? Okay, good. The Buddha presented us with a lot of models of how we exist, from very simple models to very complex ones. The simple ones are not wrong, they're just not as detailed and not as finely outlined as the more complex ones. So we say, who am I? Who is Robbie? Who is Joanna? Okay? The simplest model he gave is, he said, Joanna is a mind and a body. You can look at everything that we call Joanna, and it's either the physical aspect or the non-physical aspect. Okay? Nothing more than that. There's no soul there, according to the Buddhist teachings. There's just a consciousness in which thoughts arise, and there's a body. And we label the temporary coming together of that mind and that body as Joanna. Okay? At the time of death, the mind separates from the body. The body decays, the mind goes on, and there's no more Joanna. But we say Joanna is just that temporary phenomena labeled upon that combination of body and mind. Okay? Very simple model of how we exist. Another model he gave us that's a little more elaborate is known as, referred to as the five aggregates. And if you're new to Tibetan Buddhism, you'll soon find out that they love lists. Three of this, five of this, 64 of this. So this is a relatively simple one. It's referred to as the five aggregates. And the also referred to as the five skandhas, the Sanskrit term, S-K-A-N-D-H-A-S. Okay? Does anybody know what the five aggregates are? This is another model the Buddha said, okay, if I'm looking at Robbie, what is there? What is Robbie made up of? How does Robbie exist? And the Buddha said one way you can look at that is you can say he is made up of the five aggregates. Anybody know what the five aggregates are? Yeah. Form, okay. Form or matter, okay.
Sensation
or sensation or feelings, okay. There are lots of different translations. Perception, good. Sometimes, and that's also referred to as discrimination. Yes, that's a tricky one. Okay, mental formations. Consciousness. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Buddha's saying, if we look at Robbie, we can say he's made up of form, feelings, discrimination, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Okay, form is pretty obvious. That's the physical aspect of our existence. These other three are non-physical aspects. Sensation or feeling is that very unsophisticated, crude reaction to everything that we come into contact with, everything that we perceive. We instinctively, or not even instinctively, we automatically have a feeling of, I like it, I don't like it, or I don't care about it. Everything, every thought, every perception, if we look at it closely, is some elaboration of one of those. Everything we come into contact with, I like it, I don't like it, or I don't care about it. And there are very few things that we truly don't care about. Most of them are variations on I like it or I don't like it. So it's really kind of infantile when you think about it. But we just go through life liking and not liking things. That's basically what our feelings are. I mean, we elaborate them and justify them and make them sound much nicer than that. But we go through life, I like it, I don't like it, I don't care about it. What determines if I see that cup and I like it? Where does that come? Why do I like that cup? Attachment, but why do I like it? Why do I not like it? Karma, past experiences. That's the result of past actions of body, speech, and mind. These instinctive, they seem automatic. We don't have any control over them. Okay, why do I like this and not like that? Why do I like blue and not like red? That is the result of past karma, okay? And we go through life under the control of karma, liking, not liking, or very rarely not caring about people, things, experiences, blah, 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 okay? That's a big part of who we are. Okay, perceptions or discrimination. This is the ability to again, this is defined in lots of different ways. The way I'm going to do a simple way. It's the ability to distinguish that cup from everything that is not that cup. Okay? It's somewhat in the quality of recognition, somewhat in the quality of having seen it before, but it's the ability to distinguish between cushion and not cushion. Again, I'm picking on Joanna and not Joanna. Okay, a necessary part of functioning in the world. Perception or discrimination. Consciousness is what we've been talking about, is just being aware of things, perceiving things. We have said that we have sense consciousnesses. We have consciousness that perceives what our eye organ provides, what the ear organ provides. And then we have mental consciousness. Okay? And then the best definition of mental formations is everything that's left over. Everything that's not in one of these other categories. But it includes things like regret. Dreams are in this category. The most important one, which you mentioned, is volition, which is what creates karma, moving towards objects. But don't get hung up on the definition of that one, because it's really tricky, and you're going to hear it explained a gazillion different ways. But it's various. If you're coming to the Friday night classes, you could say this is the mental factors. Okay, it's a subgroup of experiences of consciousness. Okay? So we have the physical aspect, then we have feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, the non-physical aspect. And what don't we have in there? No, memory would be a mental formation. What is it not there?
Mathematics
is something that it's not part of who you are, but it's something that your consciousness perceives, okay? In the same way that a book or literature, you perceive it, okay? This isn't explaining everything in the whole world. This is explaining you as a person. How do you exist? What is not here is any self that these belong to, okay? This is where we get into emptiness. There's no Robbie who each of these belongs to. It's the aggregation of these that we just put the label of Robbie on. Okay? And this each one of these is changing continually. Okay, my body is not the same as my body was when this class started, much less the same body as I had 10 years ago. Okay? In the same way, my feelings are not the same. What I'm discriminating is not the same. My mental formations are not the same. My consciousness is not the same. Everything in here is changing. Okay? It's an aggregation of impermanence. All these things are changing continuously, and we just label it Robbie, and we think, that's Robbie, that's who he is, that's the way he's always going to be. And that's a concept that we conventionally apply to the aggregation of these factors. Okay? But if we look at it, I mean, it's like looking at a droplet of water under a microscope. It's full of all sorts of things that are moving and changing and everything. There's nowhere in here that you can find a permanent, unchanging Robbie. Robbie is just a concept or a label applied to these changing aggregates. Yeah, Mike over here, please. Yeah, I'm going to have to leave it there. Yeah, so we'll take a couple comments.
Quick question. So five aggregates make humans, or does it make sentient beings?
Makes all sentient beings, yeah, beings with consciousness, yeah, not just human beings. Good question. Yeah. Okay. So this is just a model, okay? It's not inherent truth, but the Buddha says this is one very useful way to look at who you are and who other people are, okay? I look in here, I can't find any one of these that's not changing. I can't find any one of them that is Robbie. It is the aggregation of these five factors that functions as Robbie in this world, okay, in this lifetime. But there's no Robbie outside that these belong to. It's the coming together of these temporarily that we label as Robbie. Yeah.
Robbie has the karmic seeds that are ripening that would make him unique from someone else.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. My karma is my karma. My karma is not your karma.
Right. But it's affecting the aggregates.
Yeah, the aggregates are the results of are the results of karma. That I have this body, this consciousness, these feelings is all the result of karma. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. just something to think about. We'll review that next week. Okay, the five aggregates and why it's important. So that's the class for tonight. Joanna has, do you have some more of the completion forms if somebody?
If we have them out before class, if anyone not get one?
We need one over here, yeah. Okay. So the homework this week is to meditate, do the clear light meditation. On the clear, just play with it. I mean, there's nothing right or wrong about it. And if you can't do it, just don't get it. That's fine. Do that 6 days this week and continue with the readings that are listed on the form. Let's see. The readings are online at online learning at fpmt.org. And you go to the first Discovering Buddhism module and the code word, you have to set up an account, just a name and a password, and then the code word is clear light to get in, one word, to get to the readings. And that's it. See y'all next week.